And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
But then in families, it's so hard because just like a teacher who has a child in the classroom and like that's a reflection of them, that's the false belief that they hold. As a parent, the false belief we hold is our children are a reflection of us. And they are not. All four of my children are their own little individual people that all have their own journeys to walk.
Yeah.
And I have mine and my husband has his. And some days we're all aligned and the conscious discipline in our house looks solid. And some days, not at all. So
yeah.
It's just this constant practice.
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today I have for you, her name is Mary, someone who is a parent, who is a teacher, who is a leader. And so hopefully we can talk about all fronts today and how we use our skills to navigate all those different environments and hear a little bit about her journey and becoming that and helping others grow. But without further ado, I'm going to allow her to introduce herself and tell y'all about her and a little bit about her journey. And then we'll jump even further and deeper into the conversation. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Mary Navarro. I am a wife and mother of four children. My oldest is a bonus. He'll be 21 this year. And then I have three littles, 4, 6, and 8. I am an educator. Started in the classroom as an assistant and then kind of worked my way through classrooms. I've taught in classrooms first through 12th grade. I did some intervention for a while, infant through high school, and then went into administration, back into the classroom because of COVID. And now I am a school director, school owner of a small school in Phoenix that serves infant through third grade.
Okay. And I think when I met you, and this is someone I met at a conscious discipline conference, I believe it was CD1.
It was Elevate last year.
It was Elevate. Oh, yeah. Okay. It was Elevate, which I'm actually, hopefully we can connect again this year. Elevate, I will be going. I don't know if people have seen me put that out there for the world. And I think Mary's also trying to go, so you might be able to meet both of us. And by the way, this is the perfect time to let you know that if you want to go to Elevate, if you are a teacher, you can put in the promo code Mr. Chaz Elevate, and you'll get a free emotional mayhem book. So just a little plug right there before we start the conversation. Wasn't planned, but might as well let you know. And it's October 13th to the 15th, if you're hearing this in time. But I want to know a little bit about your journey into like why you kind of went back into, you know, administration. I know that I met you, it was kind of COVID times. And I believe you were still in the classroom at that point. Mm-hmm. I want to know a little bit about why you chose to get your own school and a little bit about how that's going.
So I started early. I started in the classroom as an assistant when I was 17. And at that phase in my life, I knew everything because at that age, everybody does, right?
Yeah.
And I was always like, oh, I could do better. I could do better. That person's doing it wrong. I could do better. And then I became a parent, and you know, you're the perfect parent until you have children. And so I had my first youngest when I was 20, and kids don't come with a manual. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. And their school was offering a CD parenting class. So my husband and I, we took this parenting class, and I was like, oh, I've got this. Like, check all the boxes. I'm going to do it perfect. That also wasn't the case. Still not there. Still trying. And I went in, I started using it in my classroom, just kind of slowly telling everybody about it. You know, like, you get it and you get hooked. And so we did it. And so at the time I was working in a small kind of rural community. I had a classroom of 46 students at this startup charter school. Mm. I had no idea what I was doing, but I tried. I thought I knew what I was doing. I ended up having my second youngest, and we were paying more than I was making for my children to go to Montessori infant toddler programs. And so the school that they were at offered to have me on board at tuition discount. So I was like, yes, yes, please. And so when they brought me on board, I was in a fourth through sixth grade classroom. But really, my biggest job was they wanted to implement conscious discipline with staff. And here I am. No, I know everything. And I jump in, and I'm young. I'm telling these older people what to do in very wrong ways. And I was getting so frustrated because it's so great. The science is behind it. It's there. It's scripted for you to start. Like, just do it. Like, why is this such an issue? And I just remember hitting these like kind of like what the heck moments, and I'm just getting really frustrated with staff, with parents, never with myself, because if people were to just do what I said, then it wouldn't be an issue.
Right.
And I hit a wall, like a wall that I was just like, maybe this doesn't work. Like, and I was listening, it was actually on Becky Bailey's podcast, and she was talking about how like CD gets this bad rap because the adults in the situation don't hold the powers to implement the structures. And I was like, like that was just like one of those ones where I'm like, I have to sit with that for a while. Mm-hmm. And I had a great team at the time. I worked with two social workers, which was like free therapy in the office all day long. And one of the social workers, Crystal, she said, Mary, you have to have positive intent. Like, there's this, you have to have positive intent. And I was like, I can't. It felt like positive intent felt like an excuse to me. Mm. It felt like adults using it as an out. Mm. Like, I'm doing my best. And the best wasn't cutting it for me, their best. But I was doing mine, and I was equally as frustrated. And so I really struggled with that and implementing at this school. And I think a lot of it had to do with administration that was in place wanted conscious discipline. They wanted the sticker that said, we're a CD school. CD doesn't give those stickers, but like, and it's, you know, it's because it's all adult held, and things change, and to stamp a school like that would be very dangerous. And so the owner of the school at the time just really wanted it for promo, and she didn't really believe it. And that was frustrating to me. And so my only solution to that was to go and learn more. So I went back to grad school for educational leadership to become a principal. And this was right before COVID hit. And part of, in the state of Arizona, when you're in this program, you have to be under a certified principal, state certified principal. So I had to leave the school I was at that we were implementing and go to another school, which was not a conscious discipline school. And got the job, it was great. I was supposed to be just a principal intern, and COVID hit and they couldn't find a teacher. And so I was like, oh, guess I'll do that too. So here I am trying to be admin. I was doing a lot of like dean of students stuff, a lot of discipline stuff because they really struggled there. And then I had this classroom of fourth through sixth grade Montessori students. 2/3 of them had never been in a Montessori classroom before. So it was just, and coming off of COVID and teaching remotely and hybrid and in person all at the same time. And it was just crazy shenanigans.
Yeah, sounds like a mess.
it was a mess. And I really wanted CD to happen there. And I was coming off of this school that like 4 years just gave it my all to like, we're going to get this. I don't really know what even getting it would even mean to me anymore. But when I got to this school, I kind of knew like by the first week, I was like, these admin are so rooted in what they believe. That is so contradictory to just my moral compass. But I'm also committed, right? So I stuck around there for a year. And then went to a public school that my children were at, public Montessori school. They're still there. It's an amazing school. And it was within a school district, right? So you're in this district, you're in this school, you have a principal who's like technically your boss, right? They're in charge of culture, climate, running the place. And then above them, you have, you know, your district level leadership and special education leadership and all kinds of, we get, when you get big, you get admin heavy. Mm-hmm. And so here I am, I'm in a first through third grade classroom. And I have this child who is glorious. He is the coolest kid, but hard time regulating emotionally. And whether that's because of COVID or trauma or just in chemical balances in the brain imbalances, I think he just had a mixture of all of it. But I knew I had the skills then to help him. I knew what I needed to do in my classroom, right? And most of that has to do with positive intent. This kid is doing the best he can with what he has in the moment. I'm doing the best I can with what I have in the moment. And everybody who is trying to help us, most of the time, I didn't feel helpful to me, didn't help feel helpful to the family, but they were also doing the best they can with what they had in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I really struggled to get him what he needed outside of my classroom. And he's good. We built skills, right? The only thing you can do is build skills, right? And so we're just always constantly practicing in the hallway, role-playing, just finding around places around campus where he could be of service when he wasn't successful, usually during transitions, and really just honoring the light in him. And in the middle of all of this, I was approached by a former parent of mine. I taught her daughter in high school. And she said, hey, have you ever thought about owning a school? And I was like, yeah, it's like on, you know, the vision board for when I'm like, you know, a long ways down the road when I'm done raising my children, whatever. And I was like, I've always dreamed about it. I used to drive around the neighborhood to get my kids to nap, and I would just like go peek over the fences of Montessori schools. Just one day it was going to happen. And she was like, oh, well, I kind of meant like now, like next year. And I was like, oh, yes, right. So I'm like, okay, we're going to make this happen. So now I'm here. I took over Bella Montessori on June 1st of this year. Mm-hmm. And it's really just a different feeling, holding that positive intent for staff and families, for leadership, whether it be in my children's school, because that's the school I just left, right? Where leadership was doing the best they could with what they had. So holding that positive intent there, holding that positive intent for families and staff and and children in a different kind of way. Like, there's nobody to point the finger at now. It's me. And to really own that and use all of these skills. I've been practicing CD for 9 years, but it really just all kind of comes to a head in this role. It's an exciting position to be in.
Let me, because you talked about positive intent a few times there, and it sounds like that's either a skill that you've had to just really maybe one that you struggled with the most, or maybe it was a missing piece. Why do you think positive intent is so important? And like, what happens, you think, you know, when we don't have positive intent, when we don't see the best in others, like, how has that changed, or times where you didn't have positive intent, how did that change the way that you move, the way that you practice skills, the way that you approach things when you didn't have it, as opposed to when you did have it, or you were actively using that skill?
I don't know if they still do this at CD1, but at the end you draw a bracelet. Did you draw a bracelet at CD1?
I didn't draw a bracelet, but...
Oh, go okay. Ahead. So in CD1, they have like the first CD1 I went to, they had a basket and it had all of these like rubber bracelets. Like, remember the big thing when I was in was like the yellow Live Strong, but everybody needed one. And Amy Spidell is up there and she gives her whole spiel on, sometimes you draw a bracelet and you're really good at it, but usually the bracelet you draw is the thing that you are going to need to work on the most, and it's going to make the biggest impact. Positive intent. And it was kind of this, a little bit of a joke at first, because it's the thing I struggled with the most. And I had the social worker I worked with, Crystal, said, when she said that she got a pair of heart-shaped sunglasses. It's actually the only shaped sunglasses I'll wear now. And they would be on my desk, and we would be walking in the meeting with a parent or a difficult meeting with our director, and she would hand me my sunglasses. Like, make sure you're wearing these in the meeting. What happens with positive intent is you kind of have, like, you have two options in a situation. You're going to look at it like everybody is doing the best they can with what they have in the moment, and your likelihood of approaching that situation in a positive light is very high, and you're going to be able to get more from it because you're focusing on solutions, right? Goes to the power of attention. What you focus on, you get more of. Typically in times of stress, we go to finger pointing. When things aren't working, we go to, it's the parenting at home. Parents aren't doing it right. Teacher's not doing it right. My admin sucks. Like, there's all of these other routes and escapes we can take. And none of them are helpful.
Yeah.
And so really going and leaning into this positive intent with, like, even in these really hard situations where a child in your classroom is not getting what they need, whether that be at home or from leadership, because I needed more help, right? Like, what I was really saying, and kind of my like light switch when I know that I'm triggered or when I'm needing more help, is I get away from that positive intent. And so now I just know when I'm feeling that, when I'm feeling the blame, the point, the finger, I really need a shift to this positive intention around everybody, because nobody, like, I've met a lot of people I didn't agree with in education, but I have never met anybody in education that was in it for bad purposes. Like, everybody goes into education, like, wanting to make a difference, wanting to change the world, wanting to make an impact on children's lives. And there are things that get in the way of that, right? As a principal, when part of my evaluation is student retention or lack of less, you know, less write-ups, the better. And then I have this child who is struggling and parents are complaining about this one particular child, like my survival is going to pop up and I'm going to go to blame, right? And really, I'm going to fumble and try to do what's best in the situation. But if I'm in time of stress, I'm just going to do what's best and not easiest, but maybe most convenient, or what the next strongest voice in the room is wanting, right? And so that's human. We're human. And really, like, that positive intent for me, I think, has been the biggest impact that CED has made. And when you don't hold it, you can't get anywhere. You get nowhere but frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know. And so we were talking a little bit about this before, and I've started working at a school, and kind of like you, I was actually surprised when I decided to work at the school. I really decided to work at the school because of the leader. I really believe in the leader. But I was going through the manual, and I was actually surprised to see that conscious discipline was in their operating manual, that it's something that they're supposed to be implementing. But, you know, you talk to the people at the school, or you talk to, you know, pretty anyone other than the director, like, they don't even know what conscious discipline is. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for me, I kind of immediately go into that thing of like, oh, are you like, is this something that they're just trying to, you know, say that they do so they can say that they do something, right?
Yeah, it's a marketing tool. Yeah.
Or is this something that is real? And then I kind of go in thinking about it, is like, well, maybe this is something that they've had a hard time implementing, or they've tried to implement mm-hmm. in some ways in the past, and for various reasons, like, it stopped, or it didn't happen, or it didn't work out. And so, like, seeing it, and even just, you know, having positive intent for this kind of new school that I am a part of now, or this new company that I'm a part of. So I can see it as like, oh, are they just trying to fake it? Or are they struggling to really implement this in a meaningful way and make it meaningful for other people who work there, other, you know, staff members? And seeing it in the way of like they're struggling gives me so already, just with that mindset, gives me so many more ideas and also motivation to make it meaningful, as opposed to like, oh, they're just faking it. It's really even just discouraging for me to really think of it in that way, and will decrease the likelihood in which I'm actually going to approach it in a way that's going to be, you know, bringing CD to the school and to other mm-hmm. other teachers, conscious discipline. I'm going to be able to be more helpful and spreading it, seeing it as, all right, this is a company that is struggling to implement this in a meaningful way.
Mm-hmm. They might not have the skills, just like kids. And I think that's like, it's, to me, and I feel like for a majority of teachers, it's so much easier to look at a child who is 6 or 7 and say, they're missing skills. Let's build up whatever skill that they need to make this situation more helpful, right? And, you know, Becky Bailey says, all the kids come to us with a backpack full of skills, and our job is not to take any away. Like, sometimes their best skill is slamming the door, throwing the F-bomb. I don't know. I used to teach high school, and that was a big skill they had.
Yeah.
And it's not our job to take them out. It's our job to just build that backpack full of skills and increase the likelihood that they're going to use one that's going to be more helpful.
Yeah.
And we give that to kids. I can give that out to kids like candy all day long. But when you flip that and have to hold it for yourself,
mm-hmm.
and have to hold it for other adults in the room, that's hard.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. It's the same thing. I have my backpack of skills and you have yours. And I have big dreams to implement CD But that journey for everybody in my building, whether that be a teacher or a parent or a student, is going to look different. It's not a box I can check. It's not a list of standards, right? And we have these powers and skills and structures that we implement into our centers or into our homes. But it's really all about how that staff or that adult is holding that power. Because like you can have a beautiful safe corner, safe place in your classroom. We call them peace tables in Montessori, peace corners. But if you don't really hold the power behind that, which the amount I can hold the power really goes into how much I can be conscious of my own stuff. It's tricky, right? It's tricky. And I think we want so badly as admin or as people running schools to see the structures in the room.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, we know how to fix this safekeeper ritual. We know how to save this peace corner, safe place. And it's because you can see those. Those are tangible things.
Yeah.
And in the world of education, when you have to provide evidence, it's hard to provide evidence of my own beliefs unless you're shadowing me.
Yeah.
And you can like feel the vibe essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And see the action. And so when an administrator has to walk in a room and check off a structure, like, cool, but it might not all be there.
Yeah. And that's, and that speaks to so much. Like, I really do believe in when we're assessing teachers or assessing a building that we really should be going in there and feeling the vibe. Like, that really should be a part of the assessment, because you really can, you can feel it. Like, I don't care what anyone says. Like, you can, if you spend time, it takes time, but if you spend time in the room, you can feel the powers, you can feel the skills, you can feel if the teacher has positive intent for the children. And part of that is often just kind of being in the community. Now, sometimes it takes us actually being in there and being a part of the community for a little bit, but you can feel those things. And, even if us as adults can try to like fake it or that, for a period of time, the children will always rat us out. They will be who they are.
The children that feel the fakeness the most are the ones who need us to be real the most.
Yeah.
Like the highest like vibe check in the room is the kid that is pissed off in the corner. Like, and he knows if you're coming at him from a positive light or not.
Yep.
And the moment you step into that situation and lose that composure, lose your skills, your powers, it doesn't have a happy ending.
There is a child who is 4 years old that I was working with, that I'm working with currently. And, you can kind of tell like that this is the child that like hears his name all the time being called and being yelled at. And you can tell that like anytime, and it was one of my probably first few days there. And so I'm spending a lot of time observing, not really intervening a lot, because I'm just really trying to see who the children are, trying to see how they're reacted to, how they responded to, how just feeling the vibe and the culture of the room. And you can, this child in particular, anytime that a teacher he would do something that he was not a desirable behavior or didn't meet the expectations of the teachers, he would know and he would react and very much in his survival skills, using the running away or fighting, or you could see just like the shift in his body language whenever a teacher was coming to him. And so there was a time where he hurt another child, and they were crying, they were upset, and what I did, like, he kind of immediately, and he didn't know me very well, but he just kind of, he expects what he expects from teachers. He has these experiences with teachers. And I pulled him, and he like trusted me enough
to make physical contact with him. And I was really trying to just remove him from a situation because he was really ramped up, and I was just trying to like get him out of there. As I talked to, I think I was talking to some admin about what happened and kind of needing some ice pack, and he was listening, and I could tell that he was listening to how I was describing the situation. And I think I said something that I think I, the way I described it was like, you know, they were playing and so-and-so accidentally like hurt, you know, hurt them. And like, he wasn't trying to, but I was being very intentional about, about communicating, about how I was communicating to admin about what just happened and showing him that I had positive intent for him. And when I tell you that his whole body language changed, and how much more receptive he was for me. Like, it was in that moment that I had established trust with him. And since then, our interactions, whenever, you know, I have to, you know, hold a boundary with him, or I have to, you know, I need to coach him, or I need, want to build skills with him or show him a different way to handle the situation, he's been so much more receptive to me. And it was, I could see it in that moment, in every moment since then, how much trust was built between me and him because I held positive intent with him in that moment, in every moment since. And this hasn't been, he hasn't used it to like try to take advantage of me and try to like, oh, I can just use this as an excuse and get away with anything. Really, I would say on the opposite end that he, from my observations, that he really does, when we are doing skill building, when I am trying to show him a different way to handle a situation, or a way to handle a situation in the, in the beginning, he's so much more receptive to that. And he really tries and he really practices. And it's, and it's because I see the best in him, and I really see it bringing out the best in him. Now, is this kid still like sometimes hurting other people and sometimes getting frustrated? 100%. But the difference is that he is receptive to learning and practicing and trying. And I think that makes all the difference. And even, you know, this is like not even just with, like, I see the same kind of impact being made with teachers I'm working with.
Right. And because I think like that teacher in that classroom, I would assume, which assumptions get you in trouble. But when you hold this belief that you can control other children's behavior, the children in your classroom, situations like that child, don't put us in our executive state to handle situations. We can't remain composed because that child shouldn't be doing that. And it's my fault that they're doing that because, right? And so for my staff and in my center, I'm like, hey, you can't control another person's behavior. That child's behavior is on them, and your behavior is on you. And when you cut that tie, teachers are like, you can almost feel the weight lifted off their shoulders. And I tell them, like, when I walk into your room and you are struggling, or a child in your classroom is struggling in that moment, there's zero judgment.
Zero judgment. Right? Yeah.
I'm in there, and I'll often look at the teacher and say, what do you want me to do? Do you need a break? Like, do you need me to take over, or do you just want me to take, you know, the child and give them a moment? And a lot of the times, I mean, I now have teachers who will like come up and like kind of tell on themselves, right? Like, I'm losing my composure. I need a minute. And it's like, cool, I got you. Right. And, we have that, we're human, and we can't make these shifts in classrooms. Like, we can go in and coach kids all day. I feel like that's the most joyous part of my job. But until we can really instill the beliefs in teachers, which means we have to hold them ourselves, and we have to hold them for them until they pick them up as well, we're not going to create these shifts we want, because I can't be everywhere. And at some point, I have to let that go and trust my staff, trust my students, trust my families, that they're going to pick it up, that they're going to use the skills that I've been putting in their backpack. And hopefully, by delegating that, which was hard for me to do, I can keep the skills, the strong skills in my backpack up at the top, right? I'm likely to grab for those first.
So let me ask you this. You mentioned you are a wife and a mother. How has that journey gone in terms of implementing conscious discipline in your home and holding the powers and the skills? Oh, I see you looking away.
Right now. I'm laughing because my husband now has this line that says, or he said, my husband is the most composed man on the planet. I would put him up against anybody. And it's interesting. We both come from very, I think everybody does, but just very hard and interesting family situations. And the man that my husband is, I don't know how he did it, to be honest. He is like the best. And I know that puts him up like way high. He messes up, we all do, but like his skill of composure is like solid. And when we first started conscious discipline, you get this script that it's like, oh, I see you're feeling frustrated. But that's like not the script you use in high school and on adults, right? Yeah. Like that's the script you use with 6-year-olds. Yeah. But you know, that's all I had. I had the script. So yeah. I'd do that to my husband and he would say, don't you conscious discipline me? It's the hardest in our homes, I think, for me. It is a continued struggle, and I've just accepted it always will be for myself. Like I have to do this thing for me, in me, like all of the things. It's me. But then in families, it's so hard because just like a teacher who has a child in the classroom and like that's a reflection of them, that's the false belief that they hold. As a parent, the false belief we hold is our children are a reflection of us. And they are not. All four of my children are their own little individual people that all have their own journeys to walk.
Yeah.
And I have mine and my husband has his. And some days we're all aligned and the conscious discipline in our house looks solid. And some days, not at all. So It's just this constant practice. I think it for me, because I'm a recovering perfectionist, like this idea that you're never going to reach the finish line with conscious discipline, like you're never going to check all of the boxes. I mean, you might on one day and then the next day it's not going to be there. But like this constant ongoing internal work to do the work that we do on the outside is like the struggle is real every day. But it's a good struggle, right? It's what's going to shift. And it's what, like, I know it sounds cheesy, but it's what's going to change the world, right? Like, if I can change the way that I look at things and the way I approach situations, and even pass a sliver of that onto my children or onto my staff or onto the families we serve, like, that's it. That's going to be the shift. So it's hard.
Let me ask you, let me dive a little deeper into the children are a reflection of you, because that is, I think that is a really difficult thing to kind of to get
that past. That false belief is so hardwired on a majority of people's CD-ROMs that it's just like,
And so how do you talk a little bit more, especially like with your children, because that's your blood. It doesn't get any deeper than that. Those are your children. You know, you birthed those children, you know, and the temptation to, you know, for them to want be a reflection of you, or for you to want to control them, or for you to control their behavior, because, and like you talked earlier, like a lot of times the, you know, children do something that people do go to blaming the parents. Well, it's the parent, you know, so like, and it can be any behavior and it can just be on, you know, a day that they're having. But how do you kind of like wrestle with that and win and pin that false belief like down so that you can be at your best?
Well, I think one, just grace of knowing that we're human and cannot be at our best all of the time. Like, it is humanly impossible to be in our executive state all of the time. Like, my lid is going to flip at some point 100%. Because I'm human.
Yeah.
And the important thing is I'm conscious that my lid is flipping. That's the important thing, right? But when it came to parenting, when I had my first youngest very young, but I have a bonus son, my stepson, who he'll be 21 next month. And I've been with his dad, my husband, since he was 7. And I am a stepchild myself on two sides. My parents are divorced. And when I walked into the situation, I was not going to be what my stepmom was to me. Like, that, my only goal was to not be what I had, which was like, I love her and I hope she doesn't listen to this. But when I was growing up, she was doing the best she could with what she had, but it was like wicked witch, like Cinderella stepmom. And I wasn't going to be that. And so I get Josh, and he is being raised in two households, right? He's being raised in ours and he's being raised in his mom and his mom's. And both of those homes look very different, not right or wrong, just very different. And here we go to like a parent teacher conference and we're hearing these things and I'm just like, not my kid, like, no way. I'm trying to fix it. And you can't fix it. And so he's off to high school. I'm like literally bending over backwards. We have this thing in our house. You commit to something, you commit to a football season, you're going to stick it out. Whether you like it or not, like, that's a commitment of commitment, which is probably some false messages that I need to rewire on my own CD-ROM. But at the time, that's what I had. And so he wanted to quit football. And I said, nope. I would get off work early. I'd meet him at his 7th period class. I'd walk him to the football field. I'd sit there and watch him practice and we'd go home. Like, you're not quitting. And I was literally burning myself at both ends to make sure that this kid matched what I thought he needed to match to reflect me.
Mm.
And there's only so long you can do that. Mm. It hit me like a lot of other things hit me, and that's really hard because I'm really stubborn and I couldn't do it. I cannot control the person he is. And he's a beautiful person. He is a lovely human being that is the most caring, thoughtful. He would do anything for anyone. And just letting go of this division I had for him, because it wasn't him, right? It was mine. And so the letting go piece, I think, was the hardest part in parenting for me, to say like, oh, like, you know, he didn't go to college. He might one day, I don't know. That was my dream for him, but that's not his dream for him, right? And so letting go of these things and watching him blossom as a human being and loving him unconditionally. Mm. That's what it looks like on a daily basis. And in order to give that to him, in order to give that to my husband or my children, I have to hold that for myself. I have to be okay with the decisions I make in a day, the way that I'm reflecting myself. And I think just really holding on to that helps me hold my composure, especially when it comes to my children. But there are days where I'm tired and the composure's out the window. Because, like, if I don't have sleep and coffee, the executive functioning is just not there always.
That's really big there. You said that for you to kind of accept who he is as a person and the decisions that he makes and how he navigates the world, you have to accept the person that you are and the decision that you make and how you navigate the world. And that's like another case of just like, we have to have the skills and our powers ourselves before we can really extend them to children and other people, really. That's really powerful. Any last things you want to say or any last notes that you want to hit before we get off and this to the world?
I don't know. I would just say my wish to anybody who is listening is that they hold on and they don't give up. I think when things get hard, it's really hard to hold on. And some days are really hard and we want to give up and we want to just say, you know, screw it. I'll just do it the way I was parented, or I'll just do it the way I was taught because it worked for me. And right. And we know, I think the world is coming to a place where we know as a collective that there is something better. There is something that holds the dignity of us as human beings, whether that be our own self or our children, at the center, and will really make the shift that the world needs to see, to make these communities where people have each other's backs, no matter how they show up. And all humans really want to be seen and heard and genuinely just loved. And all of them. And just holding on so that one day that's a reality. And it can't be a reality unless we don't give up.
What's my name? What's my name? What's